We're holding Ankhoftes Amut Bey's 12 lines from the bottom by the two dots. The Mishnah had said, Motzach Sus, if you find clothing, Minara Echad the Shloshim Yoim, you shake it out once every 30 days. So they want to ask, remember the Niyu Malila? Are you telling me that shaking out clothing is good for it? Well, Amr Rabbi Yechanan said, sort of as a sarcastic statement, sort of, Mishi Yeshla Gaudi Uman Basech Besa, if a person has an expert weaver in his house, Yinayuk Susi Bechol Yoim, then he should shake out his clothing every day. Meaning, in other words, it's Rabbi Yechanan's way of expressing the point that shaking out clothes is bad for them and it causes them to wear out. And therefore, so if you have an expert weaver in your house who can constantly be weaving you new clothing, then good, go ahead and shake it out every day. But otherwise, and of course most people don't, then don't do that, meaning that shaking out is bad for clothing. So why is the Mishnah telling us that you should shake out the clothing that you found? So the Gemara says, Amri, so they answer, okay, b'chol yom koshila, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that shaking it out every day is bad for it. But to shake it out once every 30 days is good for it because it prevents it from getting moldy or eaten by moths or whatever. Or another answer you could say, like Kasha, there's no contradiction. Depends whether you're talking about one person shaking it out or two. If you have one person takes it and shakes it out, that's fine. But if you have two people, each one is pulling on it in his direction, and therefore it's more likely that it might tear. Another possibility is there's no contradiction. One's talking about doing it by hand, and the other one is talking about beating it with a stick. When you're beating it with a stick, then you're more likely to rip it. So that's what Rabbi Yechanan is saying. Don't do that regularly unless. So in other words, according to the second and third answers, the Mishnah is saying you only have to do it every 30 days. You could conceivably, according to these answers, do it more often if you wanted to. You're just not required to do it more than once in 30 days. But according to the second and third answers, at least you could do it even every day as long as you have only one person do it, or as long as you do it by hand rather than Rabbi Yechanan we're talking about having two people doing it or beating it with a stick. And yet another possibility is there's no kasha. Hobida amra hobida kitna. Depends whether you're talking about a woolen garment or a linen one. So Rashi explains that a woolen garment is more likely to get stretched out and torn by the shaking. A linen garment less so. The Hagoyes Hagura points out that the Rif and the Rambam learn the other way around, and then most poskim follow suit that it's the other way around. If it's a linen one, then shaking it out is not so good for it. If it's wool is stretchy anyhow, so it's not so bad, and you can go ahead and shake it out as often as you want. Okay, so now the Gemara brings a couple of other things, since we mentioned this, that Rabbi Yochanan is giving you practical advice to not shake out your clothes too often based on the criteria and the details that we said. So now the Gemara brings in a couple of other statements from Rabbi Yochanan also about things that a person should be careful of in matters of hilchos derech eretz, of behavior in other areas of life, things that a person should do to avoid danger or losing money. So Amar Rabbi Yechanan, kosa de choshin, v'lai kosa de poshin. Rabbi Yechanan says, better to drink a cup that has had witchcraft done on it rather than a cup of warm water. Pashtus, because based on what the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, Pashtus, the idea is that warm water is likely to be full of germs, as opposed to, so it's dangerous for your health, as opposed to a cup over which witchcraft has been done. It's also not very good for you because of the witchcraft, but at least you're in less danger with that. In other words, it's Rabbi Yechanan's way of saying that be very, very careful to never drink warm water. However, the Gemara says, "B'lo yamaran ela b'kli matfas." That would only apply if the water was heated up in a metal keli. Al b'kli cheres less than ba. But if it was heated up in an earthenware keli, then there's no problem. If we figure that it's in terms of bacteria and whatever else, those are more likely bepashtos to grow on a metal or molds or whatever. Those are bepashtos more likely to grow on a metal cable. Even if it was warmed up in a metal container, we're only talking about where it didn't boil, avol tzvitz. But if it came to a boil, leslan ba, then there's no problem. Again, we could assume, balabatish, that any bacteria or whatever in there will have been killed by the boiling. And even you're talking about it was done in a metal container and it didn't come to a full boil is only a problem if you didn't put in it sivya. Rashi points out anything that you put into a drink, for example, herbs or spices or things like that can be called fragrant spices or whatever can be called sivya. So in other words, if you make tea out of it, I will shut a bit sivya less than ba. But if you make tea out of it, then there's no problem. And then even if it's warm and was never fully boiled, and even if it was done in a metal container, then there's no problem. Maybe we could assume that the tea or whatever herbs you put in there also have bacteria killing properties, and obviously not mentioning why it would be dangerous with warm water, but balabatish, we could assume that that's something that would be what he means. And then Rabbi Yochanan says another thing, also in Hilchos Derech Eretz, also about teaching a person how to be careful with themselves and their property and not waste them. And again, he says it in kind of a funny way. If a person's father left him a lot of money, he wants to lose that money. So in other words, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, with the following things that I'm going to tell you, you could end up losing a large fortune in a very short amount of time, so don't do them. There are actually Rishonim, the Ritva over here, and other Rishonim have a girsa, instead of Mois Harbe, they have a girsa Mois Ribis. So in other words, a person inherited from his father money of Ribis, where he knows that his father earned it by Ribis, and he doesn't know who to return it to or whatever. So therefore, like, he doesn't want to use that money normally because, after all, it came to Isser. Technically, al pi halacha, he'd be allowed to use it because unless he finds out, we're going to learn later on in the fifth parak, Be'ez Hashem, when we talk all about the dinim of ribis, we're going to talk about that when it's ribis daraisa, then the dayanim will make you return it. And if it's ribis derabanan, they won't. But so here we could be talking about it's ribis derabanan and you don't even have an obligation to return it. But even if it is ribis daraisa, look, the son may not know who it was actually taken from. In any case, though, he doesn't want, in any case, according to these mefarshim, the vote would be that on the one hand, he doesn't want to just use it normally. On the other hand, he doesn't just want to, throw it away or whatever. So therefore, he's going to do these kinds of things which are going to use it up in a very short amount of time. Ben Yehoyada, in fact, expands on that a little bit. He says you could have a scenario where the son who inherited it himself has children or other relatives who are going to prevent him from giving it away to tzedakah or whatever. So therefore, so Rabbi Yochanan is giving this person advice. Fine, you know, do it in almost like a passive-aggressive way. Use the money for yourself, but use it in a way where it's going to be used up and destroyed very quickly. So he says, Yubash Bigde Pishtan. So a person who should wear linen garments, specific type of linen that the Gemara is going to explain in a second, the Yishtamish Beklez Chokhis, and use glass kalim, the Yisker Pelim, Al Yeshavi Mahin, and hire workers and don't sit with them to supervise them to make sure they're doing the work right. So all these kinds of things, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, all of these things a person can lose a large amount of money in a very short amount of time. So Yubash Beklei Pishtan, what kind of linen garments are we talking about? The Kitna Rumisa. Specifically, he's talking about Roman linen, which is very high quality, but it's also not very high quality. It's very expensive, but it wears out very quickly. The Yishtamash Beklei Schokis, when he says use glass kalim, he means Bezugisa Chivarta, he means white glass, clear glass. In those times, making clear glass was very, very hard to do. Generally, their glass was more like stained glass. So therefore, here we're talking about, so it's extremely expensive. It may even be more like, not so much regular clear glass, but more like crystal. And it breaks very easily. Tosfos points out, actually, that the Gemara in Sota says that after the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, then this kind of glass is butla. It's no longer to be found. The Tosfos explains, based on this Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan is talking, Rabbi Yochanan lived a couple hundred years after the Churban, so Tosfos explains that it doesn't mean that it was butla, that it disappeared completely, it means it became very, very rare. So here you have, this person is going to use some of that rare, clear glass that exists now, that exists even after the Churban, but it's going to break very easily, and he's going to lose a fortune in the process. And the Yisker Poilim Vayoshevimahan, when he said hire workers and don't sit with them, what kind of workers? Because after all, many kind of workers you can hire and you don't have to be on top of them all the time. So what kind is Rabbi Yochanan talking about where you're going to lose a large amount of money from that is Targuma. They explain Beturi when it comes to doing work in the fields or the vineyards with oxen, the Nafish Psidaihu, where there can be a huge loss. So Rashi describes, we're talking about in particular when it comes to plowing in a vineyard and when it comes to harvesting the grapes from a vineyard. What you do is you have when you're harvesting the grapes, for example, what you do is you have a wagon pulled by oxen that goes between the rows in the vineyard. You go from row to row, and the workers pick the grapes and then put them in the wagon. In fact, for that reason, by the way, you have in Masechet Kelayim, when it talks about dinim of Kelaya Kerem, you have a lot of Mishnayos there that deal with details of how far apart the vines are usually spaced in order for it to be considered a Kerem. So usually you have the minimum spacing is 4 amos, and that's why, in order to make it possible to bring a wagon between them to harvest the grapes like we're describing over here. So now Rashi describes, if you don't supervise them, then the workers are not going to pay attention. They don't care where the oxen go pulling the wagon. They're not going to make sure that they go properly on the paths between the vines. They're just going to have them go wherever they want to take shortcuts. So they're going to end up damaging the vines, and they're also the wagons and the oxen themselves are going to get all tangled up in the vines and harmed and injured. So you have the Nafish Psidaihu, you have an enormous amount of loss that can be done by doing that, by not paying attention to by the workers not paying close attention to where the oxen are going and what they're doing. Tosfos brings a different girsa, not Betodi, but rather Betavri, brings from Ben Hananel. Tavri means workers who are supervising the oxen. And so he explains particularly that it means we're talking about when they're going to plow. Now you have your plow with oxen means you have the plow blade is being dragged behind it by the ox, and it goes and bites into the soil and turns it up, and then that's how you do your plowing, and then you do your planting. If you don't supervise the workers, they're not going to make sure that the blade of the plow cuts deeply into the ground. And then what happens is you plant and you're not going to get very much of a harvest because most of it is not going to grow well. So Betavri, you have people who are hired to plow with the animals and you don't pay attention and then watch them carefully. Then they don't plow very deeply. They just do a half job like that, the Nafish Psidaihu, and then you have a great loss from the fact that the seeds are not planted properly. So either way, that's what Rabbi Yochanan means, the kind of thing where you don't supervise your workers. Okay, so again, these are all Hilchos Derech Eretz. These are all expressions that Rabbi Yochanan is using to explain how important it is if a person has money, you should make sure not to waste it, but rather to use it in the most advantageous way. Okay. We said in the Mishnah that when you have, if you find a garment, then you spread it out every so often for its needs, meaning, in other words, again, every so often, besides for shaking it out, we said you have to occasionally spread it out to keep it from getting moldy or eaten by moths or whatever. But you can spread it out, let's circle where it's necessary for it to air it out. But not for his own cover, not where he's doing it to decorate his house. So the Chachmei HaYeshiva had a question. What about if it's both? What about if you want to spread it out where it's going to be both? It happens to be one of those times where you need to air it out, but also while you're at it, you want to be able to decorate your house with it. Are you allowed to do that? So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring a proof. After all, the Mishnah says, Shotcha Litzorka. The Mishnah says you can spread it out for its need, implying that Litzorka ain't. Only when you're doing it, you're only allowed to do it when you're doing it for its own need. It sounds like if you're doing it with two intentions in mind, then you would not be allowed to, because otherwise the Mishnah could have said, Shotcha, and then that's that. So the Gemara says, not necessarily, Ema Sefer. No, because the Mishnah continues, Aval Lo L'Chvoidim. But not when it comes to his own, not for his own covered. So you could say, so you're saying you can't do it only when it's exclusively for his own covered, but if he's doing it with a double intention for itself and for him, it sounds like from those words, shaper dummy, maybe it would be fine, as long as it's not exclusively l'chvoydoi. So the Gemara says, you're right, you're right, we can't really learn one way or the other. Obviously, the Mishnah is not being so precise with its wording, and therefore we can't learn one way or the other from it what would be the din by Letzorka or Letzorka. Tosfos points out, now we learned yesterday about when you find a sefer, there we said that when you're opening it up to roll it, you are allowed to learn from it. So that's Letzorka or Letzorka. What's the difference? So Tosfos points out, because over there you have all kinds of restrictions. You can only do it once every 30 days or 12 months, as we learned yesterday. You can't learn a new topic in it. You can't repeat a topic, etc. So that'll make sure that he's not going to use it too much. The problem is over here that maybe what if, okay, he's putting it out Letzorka, but now he decides to leave it out longer than was necessary for the good of the garment itself, because now he figures I might as well continue to decorate my house with it. So that's when the Gemara is wondering whether you're allowed to do that or whether maybe we have to prevent him from doing that in the first place. And similarly, also Tosfos says, the Gemara is going to point out soon about certain kinds of kalim that we said that you find and you use them a little bit, but they're also, you're using them in ways that are not going to damage them. So that's why the question is specifically over here about where you find a garment or a rug or something like that. Okay, so we're saying you can't learn one way or the other from the wording of the Mishnah because the Mishnah is not being so precise. All right, the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring a proof from a Braisa. A Braisa says, Loishtachena loyagabe mitav loyagabe mogoid lotsorpoi. You're not allowed to spread out the garment on a bed or on a mogoid, which a mogoid actually translates as a peg. So like a peg or a hook or a frame or something like that, different Rishonim talk about the details exactly. So you're not allowed to spread it out on that. Letzorkoi for his own purpose. In other words, to decorate and beautify his house. You're not allowed to do that. Avo yishtachena, agavim mitav, agavim mogi, letzorkoi, but you can spread it out on a bed or on a frame. Where you're doing it, letzorkoi for its need to air it out. And the Braisa continues, this damdoloi orchin, orchim, if a person has guests and he wants to make his house look nicer, loyishtachen, loyagabim mitav, loyagabim mogid, bain letzorka, bain letzorka. Then he's not allowed to spread it out on a bed or on a peg or whatever, whether it's for his purposes or whether it's for the purposes of the begging. So now you see over here, since we're saying apparently what it sounds like, why wouldn't you be able to do it when you have guests? It sounds like because then you're doing Letzorkoi or Letzorka. When you don't have guests around, you can say it's not really Letzorkoi because what do you need to decorate your house? It sounds like when you have guests and you want your house to look extra nice in honor of the guests, then you're not allowed to do it. So that would be a case of Letzorkoi or Letzorka. And the Braisa is saying you can't do it. So that would seem to prove that you can't. The answer is no. Shiny hosam the mikla kolila. The difference is when you have urchim, then it's different. By putting it out in public, then it's like you're burning it. You're damaging it. Imishum eina, either because you're going to have ayin hara, because the guests are going to see it and get jealous, and that can have an effect on the garment. Imishum ganvi, or because of ganovin, because one of the guests themselves may see it and then decide to see it and then decide to steal it. So you could say in that particular case where there are guests coming, then you have a specific rule not to put it out. But that doesn't show that at other times, let's say you do want to decorate your house, stem because you like having nice hangings on your walls or something. That doesn't necessarily show that you wouldn't be allowed to do that at a time when you don't have guests around. It's just the members of your family, let's say, and you're going to put it out. You anyway need to put it out to air it. So now you want to put it in a way that will beautify your house. You can't necessarily prove from this Braisa that you can't do that. So the Gemara says Toshma. Fine, we're going to bring another proof from a Braisa. That talks about Rashi says it's talking about the Egla Arufa. Tosfos says that it's talking actually about the Parah Adruma. Both of them have basically the same dinim as far as this goes, though, which is by both of them, the Torah says you're not allowed to have done any work with the animal that's going to be the Egla Rufa or with the Parah Adruma. There we have a connection with Inyana Diyama because it's Parshas Parah. So either one of them, show like Ubad Bar, show, in the case of the Parah Adruma, the expression is Asher like Ola Aleha oil, that there was no yolk on it. In the case of the Egla Rufa, the expression in the pasuk is Asher le Ubad ba, Asher le Moshe ba oil, that no work has ever been done with it, and that it never pulled a yoke. So by the Parah Adruma, it actually doesn't say explicitly that it hasn't done any work at all. It just mentions that that it's never carried a yoke. But the Gemara explains elsewhere that that we learn Gzeira Shava because it says oil by both of them. We learn that the same dinim apply to both of them. Neither one can have done work. So now a Braisa describes like this. Hichnisa l'rivka. Suppose that a person takes the baby animal and brings it into the rivka. Now the rivka is Rashi describes is where you have three or four animals yoked together, not really yoked, but whatever, tied together, and they're all threshing the grain together. So now you have a baby animal that you brought over there in order, for example, just to keep company with its mother or to nurse from its mother or whatever, the dasha, and while it was there, it ended up threshing some of the grain. Kshera, that animal is still kosher to be an Egla Arufa or a Parah Adruma. Work was done with it. The reason is because you brought it in, Letzorko, you brought it in for its own needs in order to nurse, in order to be with its mother or whatever, and you didn't mean that it's going to, you didn't mean for it to thresh over there. It's not a psik ratio that it will. So therefore it's fine. On the other hand, b'shvil shatinak v'todush. But if you brought it in specifically having both things, you intended for it to nurse from its mother, and meanwhile it's also going to thresh the grain while it's doing that as well. So, or before or after or whatever psula, then it's possible because now he brought it in l'tzorkoi. So v'ha'hacha l'tzorkohu. Now in this case, when you bring it in b'shvil shatinak v'todush, then you bring it in for your purposes as well as its purposes, because you're bringing it in, you are bringing it in for the need of the animal so that it can nurse, but you're also having in mind that it's also going to thresh while it's at it. And v'katoni psula, and the braisa is saying it's possible, so if in that case l'tzorko is possible, then in our case over here, l'tzorko, it should be also to put out the bedspread. But the Gemara says, no, shiny hossam, it's different there by the Egla Arufa or the Parah Adruma, the Omakro, because the Pasuk says, Asher lo ubad ba mikol makom, because the Pasuk says that there was not worked with it, meaning regardless. So in other words, the word ubad doesn't mean that you didn't work with it. It means that work was not done with it. So in that case, you have a specific, if the Torah had said, Asher lo ubad ba, then fine, you would say that only when he does avoda exclusively with it. But ubad means even memela, even when it happened on its own, then it would be possible. Gemara says, well, in the same thing in the Resha as well. So what? You didn't bring it in intending for it to thresh, but in the Resha, it also threshed. If you're saying that based on the word ubad, then it's going to be possible, then it should be possible in that case as well. And the answer is, the Gemara says, no. Rather, the reason why it would be kosher in that case is because you have to compare it to the following cases, to the following case. Titznan, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Parah about the Parah Adruma. Shochan aleha oif, if a bird perched on the Parah Adruma, ksheira, then the animal is still kosher for Parah Adruma. You have work was done with it, but you don't gain anything. Now it is true by the Parah Adruma, it says only oil, but again, as we learn in Masechta Sota, it means that we learn by Xavier Shava from the Egla Arufa that it means any kind of work. So now what happens is when a bird perches on the Parah Adruma, then it's still kosher as a Parah Adruma because you haven't done anything. You didn't put the bird over there and you're not gaining anything from it. But Allah Allah Zachar, but if a male mounted the animal to mate with it, then psula, then it's possible because now you would like to do that. You would like the animal to be mated with, because after all, then it'll have babies. So we see, in other words, it's not just whether it happened on its own. In the case of Olal El Zachar, you didn't bring the male there yourself. It just came and started mating with it itself. But nevertheless, it's still possible because nichale, because you like it. Now, Tosfos points out, I mean, if we're saying that's going to make the Parah Aduma possible, so what are we saying? You're going to lose thousands of dollars that you might get for the Parah Aduma in order to have a couple of babies out of this animal. Why would it be nichale? And Tosfos says, because the vote is, if it was, it's almost like a catch-22. If it would have been kosher, then you would have appreciated it, because then you're gaining something, you're gaining potential babies that you could have, and you're not losing anything. So therefore, so now we don't call that loy nichale. It is in fact nichale for the animal to be bred. Elamai, in this particular case, because it's a parah aduma, then you're losing out because of a side thing, because it's becoming possible. Well, therefore, we are going to say that it's possible, and therefore the fact that because it's possible, therefore that's not nichale, is not considered that it's actually not nichale. So we see, in other words, so we see that there is a distinction between something that you want to happen versus something that you don't want to happen. And in the case, so Tosfos points out in a similar way with the Hichnisa L'Rivka V'Dasha, the point is that in the Reisha over there, where the animal was threshing on its own, again, you know, you could say it's not exactly like a bird poaching on there where you get no hana from it at all. Here, you are getting a little hana. The fact is, a little of the grain was threshed. But the fact is, it would have all been threshed even without that animal. So therefore, you're not really gaining anything. Anyway, Tosfos goes on to discuss various other possibilities as far as this Olah Olah Zachar. One point Tosfos brings up is that maybe Taka would only be if you brought the male over there, but not if it went up on its own. And because then it might make the difference. We had earlier in the Perek, in the case of Hechsher, of Hechsher Zroy, when it came to food becoming wet with the dew and being Mukhshar L'Kabel Tuma, we said it depended whether it was still wet at the time when you came and found out that the dew had fallen on it. Over here, wouldn't we have to say also, based on the Drosha, the Gemara is going to say now, that maybe you have to be there at the time? So yeah, Tosfos says maybe in fact there would be a difference whether you're there at the time or whether you're the one who brought the male there or not, and Tosfos brings up different other possibilities. Anyway, the point is, so my timer, getting back to the Gemara, so my timer, why is there that distinction? Why are we saying that in the case of, for example, a bird perching on the cow, it still remains valid as a part of Adruma, but a male mating with it is possible, makes it possible. So Kedra Papa. The reason is like the way Rav Papa Daushin, and this is similar to the drasha that he gave at the beginning of the parak. At the beginning of the parak, when we talked about that matter of Hechsher L'Kabel Tumah, we pointed out, Rav Papa had pointed out that the expression in the pasuk is V'chi Yutan Mayim Al Zera. If water is placed on a seed, then it's Mechsher L'Kabel Tumah. And we said we read it Yutan, which means there was placed, but it's written in the Torah without Nekudas, as if it said Yitin, he places, and therefore there has to be kind of a combination in order for it to be Mukhshar L'Kabel Tumah. It has to be that it can be that the water or the other liquid came on it by itself, like dew falling on it, but it has to be that Nichale, it has to be that you want it to be so. So the same way over here, you have a similar thing, Rav Papa points out. The Amar Papa, Iksiv Ubad V'Korinin Ubad, we read the word in the Pasuk Ubad, it was worked with. If it was actually written in the Torah that way, with a vav, have amina, then you would say, I feel him a mela. Then it would apply even if the work was done on its own without your involvement and without your nichale, then it would make it possible. So, for example, a bird perching on the animal would be enough to make it possible. The ikos of ovad, the korin and ovad, on the other hand, it says in the Torah without the vav, if we were to read it ovad, he worked, then you would say, then you would say it would be possible only if he himself directly did work with it. And in that case, for example, the Ola Ola Zachar would not possible it because he didn't do that. The male came there on its own. Hashtag dichtiv ovad bekorin and ubad, but now we have both. It says, and it's written in the Sefer Torah without the vav, ayin veiz dalad, which can be read ovad, he worked. But we read it ubad, it was worked. Therefore, in an ubad dumya de ovad, therefore, in order for it to be possible, it can be ubad. It can be that it happened on its own, but that has to be similar to ovad where he worked it. Ma ovad de nichale, just like when he works with it, he wants it to be so. Af ubad de nichale, the same way. If there's going to be an ubad, it also has to be where nichale, where he appreciates what happened. So that explains all the dinim that we said then. So now we're saying in the case of the par aduma, if a bird purchased on it, there's ubad, but there's no ovad because he didn't want it and he didn't care for it and he's not gaining anything from it. On the other hand, ola ola hazacha, when a male mounts it to breed with it, then it is nichalei, because again, fine, in this particular case, lo nichalei because he's losing out the value of a par aduma, but nevertheless, it would have been, he would have appreciated if it didn't passel the par aduma, and therefore, in fact, it does passel it. And in the case of the egla arufa, similarly, in the case of the egla arufa, also the par aduma, similarly, you bring the baby animal in there, intending for it to nurse from its mother, and while it's there, it goes and threshes, then fine, that's not ovad, because you didn't bring it in there for that purpose. If you brought it in there for the purpose that it should do both, that it should nurse and that it should thresh, then you have ovad and ubad, and therefore it becomes possible. A baby can thresh, yeah, can step on the grain just like an adult animal, can you? So the bottom line is, in other words, so not in those particular cases of egla rufa and par aduma, we have a specific reason based on the pasuk to say that lotsorka would be enough to make it possible. In the case of the garment, we don't have a pasuk like that one way or the other, so therefore we can't prove whether it's a problem when you're spreading it out lotsorka, you're doing it with both intentions for to air out the garment as well as to decorate your house. So in the end, since the Gemara hasn't come to a conclusion one way or the other, so the pasuk and paskin, you're not allowed to do it because of a suffix. It's a suffix whether you'd be allowed to do that, and therefore you can't do it.
Are you hurting the value of it?
No. It's not. Yeah, you are, because if you leave it out, that's the point. You said before, Tosfos says, in the case of a sefer, for example, you have limitations on how long you can keep it open, so therefore those limitations will prevent that you're not going to ruin it accidentally. In the case of kalim that the Gemara is going to talk about next, same thing. In the case of the garment over here, all we're saying is that you should shake it out once every 30 days and spread it out once every so often. It doesn't give limitations. So you might end up keeping it out longer than necessary, and then it's going to end up damaging it. And it's an aveda after all. You have to hold on to it and you have to watch it as a shrema chinam or a shrema sachar, according to Rabba or Rabbi Yosef, respectively, until the owner comes and gives a simon on it. So therefore, you have to take care of it. And therefore, so we're saying in the end, because we can't be sure whether you're allowed to spread it out, so therefore, to be on the safe side, you're not allowed to. Okay. Yeah. So you air it out when you need to. But don't do it. Don't do it in order to decorate your house. Do it in a way that you're doing it for the purpose just of airing it out, and then you're going to put it away. We said in the Mishnah, we said that if you find silver or copper kalim, then you should use them once in a while, because we said you have to bury them in the ground, or maybe not even bury them in the ground, but whatever. You have to, if you keep them buried in the ground, or if you keep them not used for a long time, then they're going to get rusty. So therefore, so you have to use them occasionally. So now the Gemara expands on that with a braisa. Turn it up on hamotzi klei eitz. If a person finds wooden kalim, mishtamish behen, he should use them occasionally. Bishvil shelo yirokvu, so they don't rot. If you leave a wooden keli unused for a long time, eventually it's going to start rotting. If you find copper kalim, mishtamish behen b'chamim, you can use them even with hot water. You can certainly use them with cold water, Rashi points out, but you can even use them with hot water, for example, to boil water, not to boil water, avaloy ayudeh u. You can't use them directly on the fire, because that causes them to wear out. The fire inevitably burns away a little bit of the metal. So for example, you could use, basically, in other words, you could use them as a cliche. So you find, let's say, a copper kettle, you can't directly boil water with it on the stove, but you could use it, you boil water in another keli and you pour it into that. Maybe it's made for it, but nevertheless, the balabas can use it, you can't. But yeah. Next. Clay kesef, if you find silver kalim, mishtamash behen b'tsonin, you can only use them with cold foods, avaloy b'chamed, but not with hot foods, because that causes them to get tarnished. Magrefus Vakadumus, if you find rakes or axes, Meshtamash Behen Barach, you can use them with softer things. So Rashi describes the rake, for example, might be used. You use it, for example, to rake ashes out of a fireplace, or you use them. Let's say you have a bunch of leaves, I guess, maybe also, although Rashi doesn't mention that, but Rashi gives another example. Let's say you have a bunch of fruit stuck together, so you might use a rake to separate them. So you're allowed to use the rake or whatever with soft things like that, but not with hard things, because that causes them to get blunted. Actually, Tosafos and Avinu Peretz says that actually with food, you would be allowed any kind of food, even hard food. Even let's say you have a block of cheese, let's say, and you're going to use you found an axe, for example, and you're going to use an axe to cut that. That would be fine. But when we say over here of a labor kosher, we mean, for example, to use it for chopping wood or something like that. If you found gold or glass kalim, then you shouldn't touch them till Eliyahu comes, because like we learned yesterday, those you can bury, they're not going to get damaged, they're not going to get tarnished or whatever, and in addition, glass is likely to break if you use it. So therefore, don't use them at all, hide them away someplace safe and leave them. The Braisa continues, k'derech she'omru ba'aveda, kach omru b'pikad. The same rules that apply to an aveda also apply to a pikadon. So if somebody deposited by you silver kalim, copper kalim, wooden kalim, for example, or copper kalim or silver kalim, then you can use them once in a while. But you want to ask why? Pikadon maya vitikabe. What are you doing with the pikadon? You're a shemachinam or a shemasacher. You have no business using the pikadon at all. And in fact, if you do, that's shalichus yad. So the answer is Amrav Adabachama, Amrav Sheshes, the Pikodin Shahoko Balaylam, Dinasayam. We're talking about where the owner went overseas and he's not going to be. In other words, like this. If it's a matter of if the owner is in town, then we're going to then he himself every so often should come and use his kalim if he doesn't want them to get rotted or tarnished or whatever. Then that's his department to do. But if he went away to Medinasayam, then implicitly he's telling you that you're responsible for making sure that these things don't happen, and if that requires that every so often you use them, then so be it. That's not considered shlichus yad. That's considered doing something on behalf of the pikkudim. If he doesn't do it himself, if he's in town and he doesn't come to do it, then if the shomer. If the owner is in town and he doesn't come to do it, then it's called aveda midas. It means like he's causing on his own for his thing to get damaged, and you're not responsible for if it gets tarnished or rotted or whatever. If the owner is away and the shomer doesn't do it, Mepashtos, I guess we could say maybe it's considered pshia on the shomer's part. I don't know. In a similar vein, when we talked about yesterday, when we talked about the Yavah Pekodin of a Sefer Torah, and we talked about that you open it up and you open it up and roll it every so often and you read it, would be a similar kind of thing. If the owner is in town, then he's expected to do that. If the owner is out of town, then you have to do that occasionally. And then we were talking about that while you're opening it, you might be allowed to learn from it, even though that would be Shlichus Yad. But in this case, you have to open it anyway, so then you might be able to glance at something. Okay. Next. The Mishnah had said matzah sakai kupa. We said if you found a sack or a kupa, which is a large box or basket, v'chol davar she'en darka litol, or anything else that you don't usually carry, hareza l'yitol, then you're not obligated to carry it, because as the Gemara is going to work out now, that's something that you, not something so much that it's big, but it's not b'kavadik for you. It's not something that you would normally be seen carrying in public, so therefore you're not responsible to do it over here. So the Gemara says, menahani mili, where do we know that from? So the Tanan Abban, we learn in a Braisa. The Pasuk says, now the concept of Ashava Saveda, the Torah mentions in two places. It mentions it in Parshas Mishpatim, and it mentions it in Kiseitze. So in Kiseitze, which is the primary place where the Torah gives the details about it, and in Mishpatim, it only says it briefly. And in Kiseitze, it gives more details about it. So it says, you're not allowed to see, you can't see your fellow Yid's ox or donkey or whatever, Bishalamta Mehem, and hide yourself from them. Now, in the simple meaning, it means exactly that. You're not allowed to hide yourself from them, but rather, hoshuv to shivim, you have a mitzvah to return them. But the word v'hi salamta is also phrased as like a positive statement. You may hide yourself from them, implying that there are times when you are allowed to hide yourself and pretend as though you never saw the aveda. So what does that mean? There are times when you can ignore the Aveda and not have to do anything with it. In other words, again, because the Torah should have said, if it just meant that you're never allowed to, it would have said loisis ala mehem. It should have said something like ki sira shorachicha, etc. Loisis ala mehem, and instead the Torah says visalamta mehem, which is phrased as a positive statement, meaning that sometimes you can be visalamta. So pa'amim shatam isalim or pa'amim shiatam isalim, there are cases where you can ignore it and places where you can't. You do have at the end of the psukim over there, it does say lois suchal isalim. So you have sometimes where you can't, but on the other hand, the isalamta implies that sometimes you can. Ha ketzad, so what does that mean? Ha yakoyen vi bevesakvaris. Suppose, for example, that you found that you're a koyen and you see something lost in a besakvaris. So you can't go in there to get it. Or where you're a zaken and it's not bekavadik for you to deal with this aveda, even if it was your own, you wouldn't deal with it. So therefore, you're not obligated to do it now. There is a big discussion among rishonim when we say over here zaken. We know that zaken sometimes means a talmid chacham, zesha kana chachma. Doesn't mean specifically over here. What about, for example, if he's a rich person and it's beneath his dignity? Would he have the same heter? Maybe, maybe not. The Ramban discusses it. Other Rishonim discuss it, whether the same heter would apply to them. And for that matter, does the word zokin just mean an old person in general? That may be the same thing. So there's different possibilities that Rishonim bring up in terms of who exactly has this patur of zokin ve'ena lefi kvoda. Anyway. So that would be an example of visa lambda, where you're allowed to pretend as though you didn't see the aveda. Another example, would be where your time that you could be doing worth is, that you could be doing work is more than the value of the aveda. We're going to learn later on Lamed Daf, Lamed Aleph, Lamed Beis. We're going to talk about that. After all, you know, you are entitled to a certain amount of reimbursement for your trouble to do the aveda, but you can't. You it has to be kapoyal bottle. You would consider your time as though you were like an unemployed or minimum wage worker, and you can collect on that basis unless you make a particular tnai in front of Beis Din, as the Gemara is going to discuss later on. So now you have, for example, your time where you could be doing work is worth $100. Work is worth $100 an hour. Meanwhile, you found something that's going to take an hour for you to go and deal with it, and the whole aveda is worth only $50. So then you're entitled to hide yourself and pretend as though you didn't see it. Later on, the Gemara is going to point out that even though technically you're allowed to do such things, you shouldn't. You should go to the Nimashuras Adin, and you should you don't. At the end of the parak, the Gemara points out with these kinds of things. The expression is that whatever the expression is over there, that if a person is too picky and always is makayim such thing in himself, I won't do anything unless it's worth my time, then eventually the Eibishter is going to make that he himself loses, that his time is not quite so valuable anymore. But anyway, the point is that here we're talking about me'ikar adin. So those are all examples of visalamta. Those are the kinds of things about which the Torah says you can hide yourself from them. As far as, by the way, the Koyin Beves HaKvaris, that Ramban makes an interesting point. He says, in any case, I mean, didn't we learn before that the whole mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda is only once you pick it up? In this case, how is the Koyin picking it up in the first place that he should ever... So that's the point, in other words. But until then, he doesn't technically have a mitzvah vashe voiseloi anyway until he actually picks it up. So the Ramban says you could be talking about, let's say, that he picked it up and then the wind blew it into the Beis HaKvaris. And the chiddush is that even though he already picked it up and he already became chayiv in the mitzvah, but nevertheless, now he can't. The Ran disagrees with that, actually. And the Ran discusses Ba'arichos and says that, no, even before you picked it up, the dinim, to a certain extent, the dinim of Hashavas Aveda apply. We learned previously on Chof Vav Amud Beis, we had a case where a person sees somebody else drop a sela. We had cases over there where he's watching until the guy has yush, and we said he's over on several mitzvahs because he should have picked it up and returned it to the guy before that. But that's different over there because he's watching it over there to make sure that nothing happens to it. Here we're not talking about he saw it at one point, so therefore you could say that maybe he's already chayev in Hashavas Aveda, even though he hasn't actually picked it up yet. And therefore, the point is, it's in a Beis HaKvaris, so he can't do that. So the Gemara says, L'may itzrich kra. Now, we're saying that we're learning three different cases from the Pasuk where you're potter. We have a Koyen and the Aveda is in a Beis HaKvaris. We have Zokin ve'en alachik voidoi. And we have the case where your time is worth more than the Aveda. So the my itzrich kro, which of those cases do we need the posik to be telling us with the words v'salam to mehem? Ilema l'koyen vo b'vesakbara. So you're telling me that the chiddush is that koyen, whether that koyen shouldn't return it when it's in a b'vesakbara. The question is pshita. Of course, high esev, high lois esev. And high esev, high lois esev esev. In the case of a shavas aveda, you have a mitzvah sase hoshiv teshivim lachicha. In the case of a koyin, you have an esse and a lois esse. You have l'nefesh lo yitama ba'amla, which is a lois esse, and kedoshim yu lay lekehem, which is an esse. And we know that an esse is never docha, a lois esse and an esse. An esse can be docha, a lois esse by itself, but not when there's an esse together with it. Now, Rashi points out there is a lois esse in the case of Ashavas Aveda as well. But nevertheless, when we talk about esse docha lois esse, whether the one has a lois esse with it or not doesn't matter. It's the one that you want to be doche, you have to see is it only an esse, and then you can be doche. Classic example, for example, kilayim betzitzis, you have the lois esse to not wear kilayim, you have the esse to wear tzitzis, and the esse is doche the lois esse. Even if hypothetically, let's say tzitzis had a lois esse with it, it wouldn't matter. But on the other hand, for example, when we say over here that to not be doche, lois esse and an esse, even if the one that you want to be doche, Shavas Aveda in this case, also has a lois esse and an esse, it doesn't matter. Once you have on the receiving side an esse and a lois esse, then you can't override it. So obviously then the esse of a Shavas Aveda, and even if there is a lois esse involved as well, is not going to override the lois esse and the esse of the koyin not becoming tomei. So furthermore, lo dechin and isura mikami mamona, we're not going to be doicha a matter of isur veheter that the koyin is also to become tamei because of a matter of dine mamonas of Ashavas Aveda. So there's no chiddush that he should ignore it when it's in the Beis HaKvaris. So ella l'shaloi miruba mishochavei, right? So you're going to say that the chiddush is of the pasuk is talking about where your time is worth more than the other guy's time. The question is, we don't need the words v'salam to mehem to teach us that. Midir Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Nafka. Instead, we can learn that from what Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav. The Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. When the pasuk says efes ki lo yivacha evyon, however, there should not be any poor person among you. Now, in the context of the pasuk, it means it's saying you have a mitzvah of tzedakah and you have a mitzvah of shmitas ksapim, and the pasuk is telling you, don't worry, there won't be any poor people among you because Hashem will bench you. But lo yibacha is also can be understood as a tzivoy. There must not be a poor person among you, meaning you are responsible to make sure that you don't become poor. And from that we learn shochal kodim l'shochal adam. From that we learn that your potential loss outweighs and it comes before anybody else's. So we're going to learn at the end of the perek, for example, that let's say you lost something and your father or your rebbe or somebody else lost something, then you go deal with finding your lost thing first ahead of theirs, even though you have kibud av and kibud rabbi and so forth. But yours takes precedence over theirs.
Can you possibly repeat the rules of esses with los esses? It's not very clear.
Yeah, the rule is like this. When you have an esse against a lois esse, so you have only an esse and you have only a lois esse on the other side. So say, for example, kilayim betzitzis is one example. You have, you're not allowed to wear chatnez, but you can wear a linen garment with woolen tzitzis on it or the other way around. Why? Because the esse of tzitzis overrides the lois esse of chatnez. Another example is you're not allowed to cut off tzaras that's on the body, but if the tzaras is on the erla, then you do a bris milah, even though it means cutting off the tzaras. So those are examples of esse doicha lois esse. But when the mitzvah that you want to override includes a lois esse and an esse, then you can't override it with something else. So for example, the example we're giving over here is a koyin becoming tamei. You have an esse that a koyin has to stay kodesh and a lois esse that he's not allowed to become tamei. So therefore, nothing can override that, even not an esse and not even an esse plus a lois esse. So therefore, over here, a Shavas Aveda is not going to override the isurim of a koyin.
You're saying that when you have an esse and a los esse, one can override the other. The esse can override the los esse. But when you have an esse and a los esse, nothing can override.
The same thing, then you can't override that with anything else. Right. Tosfos discusses a little bit some of the details about that. There are details about when it comes to mitzvahs that are not applicable to all Jews, only to Kohenim. Those are in a slightly different category. So Tosfos gets into some nuances on these details of Esa Derchaloisa, but basically that's the basic rule is like that. That's relevant to our sugya. Anyway, the point is again.
What? Are you talking about? Is the Gemara talking about a Kohen Meyuchas, or it is applies to a Kohen Chazaka like today?
We're talking about any Kohen, even a Kohen Chazaka. Nevertheless, since Chazaka is a very strong thing in Torah, then we still can't allow him to become Tomei. We still are going to tell him not to become Tomei in order to do the mitzvah, because the fact is, as far as we know, he is a Kohen. So yeah, you can't eat truma d'oraisa or other such things on the basis of his chazaka, but to not become tomei, then that's still applicable to him. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, the point is getting back to the Gemara. So again, Rabbi Yehuda gives a drosha in the name of Rav that when it says efes kilo yibachayevian means shochok kodim l'shokol adam, your finances come before anybody else's, in the sense that, for example, you lost an aveda and meanwhile also somebody else did, then you can go and deal with finding you aveda first ahead of theirs. And the same thing over here then. Included in that is that if your time is more valuable than somebody else, than the other person's aveda, then you're not obligated to go deal with that aveda. So we don't need the pasuk v'salamta to tell us that. So you're right. Ultimately, we really need v'salamta only to teach us about the zokin v'enalofi kvoidoi, where you wouldn't otherwise know that from anywhere else, and therefore you need the pasuk v'salamta to tell us that you can do that. Tosfos does point out that you do have a different drasha that says that kavod abrius overrides certain kinds of mitzvahs. You have, for example, a person's relative passed away, so the kavod of burying them overrides that if he has a bris or the korban pesach to do, that nevertheless he goes and deals with the burial first. But Tosfos says, okay, kavod abrius of a mes mitzvah is much more serious, much stronger than any other kind, than any other matter of kavod abrius. Even a kohen gadol is allowed to do it, yeah. Okay. However, Omar Rabba, so now Rabba says, all of this is true, but he kisha chayavba. However, let's say a zokin sees an animal and he hits it with a stick to get it to start getting it back to the owner. Then chayavba, now he becomes completely chayav to finish returning it. Because once he started the job, and it doesn't have to mean where he hit it with a stick, anything where he made it move, then he started the mitzvah of Hashavah, then therefore he has to finish off the job. Even though he realized maybe that's not the covered dick for him or whatever, once he began. There are other Rishonim who, now Rashi says, because he began. There are other Rishonim who learn, actually, it's because it would mean once he hit it with a stick or whatever, made it move, potentially he's making it more lost. Because now potentially it's going to run away and get even more lost than it was before, and therefore he has a responsibility to undo that. Which, according to that, then therefore the Ritva explains that if the animal is anyway in a mokum amishtamer, and it's still after he hits it is also in a mokum amishtamer, according to that he might not have to return it because he didn't really change anything in the status of the animal. And the Gemara gives an example: Abaya have a Yosef kamed Rabba. Abaya was one time sitting and learning in front of Rabba. He saw some goats were standing over there. He took a clod of dirt and threw it at them, like to get them away. So Rabbi says, now you became chayiv in them. Now you have to go return them, even though it's not the covered dick for Abaya to do it. And the point is over here, the Meiri points out, he didn't even intend to do anything in terms of Hashavas Aveda, he just wanted to get the goats out of the way. Nevertheless, Rabbi is telling him, once you did that, then you already become chayiv to do the rest of the job and to return. The pastures that were sitting outdoors, I don't know, but maybe they were sitting indoors and he saw the goats from through the window, whatever, it doesn't matter. The point is that, yeah. Okay. Iboilahu, so now we have a question. What about if you have a kind of thing a person finds where when he's in the field, he wouldn't mind carrying such a thing because nobody sees him anyway. But in the city, he'd be embarrassed because of the neighbors or whatever. So now imagine, for example, let's say the Mishnah is talking about you find a big box. So we're saying it's not the covered dick for him to carry. But let's say he wouldn't mind carrying such a big box in the field. He would mind carrying it in the city because it wouldn't be becoming it. Now he finds it in the field. Does he have to return it or not? Fact is, in the field, it's not embarrassing for him to carry it. So, Mia Minan Hashava Malya Be'inin, do we say you have to do a full fledged Hashava? But Kivin Dalav Dauke Lahachza Be'ir, so since he doesn't normally return such things in the city, he doesn't normally handle such things in the city. loy l'chayiv, then he shouldn't be chayiv to pick it up even in the field, because he's not going to be, because he's not, because by the time it comes to finishing the job, it's not going to be bekavadik for him. Or don't have a soda miya sodi chayiv lay. Or maybe the fact is in the field he's chayiv, but kiven di chayiv lay v'sodi chayiv lay v'ir. And once he's chayiv to start the job in the field, then he's going to be chayiv to finish the job in the city. So what would be the din? And the Gemara says tefel. We have to leave it unresolved. So different Rishonim talk about what the possibilities are. The Rambam paskins that he would have to return it. The Rosh brings that other poskim agree. The Rosh himself says that he would actually be potter in this case. And then there's different gersois and different explanations over here about what the actual din would be. Omar Rava. So Rava says, here's the rule. Whenever you have something where if it was his own thing, he would return it, then he has to do the same thing where it belongs to somebody else. So let's say, for example, a person's own animal. If it's the kind of person who, if he saw his own animal had gotten out of where it was supposed to be, he personally would go and return the animal back into its pen or whatever, then the same way, if he finds somebody else's lost animal, he has to do the same thing. But if he himself would never handle his animals at all, even if they went out and pulled for one of his servants or whatever, then he'd be potter. And similarly says Rav, the same thing when it comes to the mitzvah priko te'ina, which we're going to learn later on Lamed Aleph Lamed Beis and Lamed Beis, we're going to talk about the mitzvah priko te'ina. The Torah tells us that if you see an animal that's having a hard time struggling under its burden, then you have to help unload and reload it. We're going to talk about the dinim of it later on. So if you're the kind of person who would do the same thing for your own animal, then you're obligated to do it for the other person. But otherwise not. So the Gemara tells a story. Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi have a ka'ozel b'urcha. Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi one time was walking on the road. Pogabeah who gavra to have a dirty paschid d'ufi. He met up with a guy who was carrying a load of wood. Oisvinu, at some point, the guy put down the load of wood, become mitpach, and he's resting a little bit. Omale, and then he says to Rabbi Shmuel, Dolly Lee, please pick up the wood and put it back on my back so I can continue going. Now, it wasn't bekavadik for Rabbi Shmuel, he was a zokin, ve'en olafi kvodei, to help load up wood on somebody's back. But he didn't want the guy to lose out. Omale, so he says to him, Kama Shavyan, how much is this wood worth? Omale Pauga de Zuza. So the guy tells him a half a Zuz. Now, apparently, Rabbi Shmuel realized he's not carrying the wood for himself, he's carrying it to sell. Well, in that case, fine, let him sell it to Rabbi Shmuel. Yorvle Pauga Zuza, Vafka de Zuza. So he gave him a half a Zuz, that way the guy's not losing out. Vafka, and he declared the wood hefty. He himself doesn't need it, and he himself is not going to carry it, and he doesn't, Why is he mafkir? Tosfos points out that he didn't want other people are going to take it and are going to end up being over on those signal, because now, after all, that wood belongs to Rabbi Shmuel. There's no simon, so he's leaving it in the street available for anybody to take, so therefore it's hefker. Tosfos also points out that really, midirabonon, you need to do hefker in front of three people, but either we're saying midaraisa, it was good enough to do it without, or maybe there were other people over here as well. Anyway, so now that it's hefker, So now the guy got smart over here. Hey, if wood over here, that's hefker, I may as well take it. And now again, he needs help putting it on his shoulder. So Rabbi Shmuel again paid him a half a zuz for the wood and was mafker. So now he sees the guy is about to try and be zoicha in the wood a third time, and this is going to go on endlessly. So Rabbi Shmuel tells him, I've been mafker it for the whole rest of the world, but not for you. So in other words, it's not hefker relative to you, and you're not allowed to take it. Well, so that's what Gemara is going to ask. Does that work? Well, me have a hefker ki hai gavna. Since when does hefker like that work? To be mafker, you have to be mafker something to everything, to everyone. We learn in a Mishnah in Masech Tepeya, Beshama says that if you declare something hefker only for aniyim, then that's enough for it to be considered hefker, and it's potter from meiser. That's potter from Trumas and Meisters. Or Basilum ain't a hefgar, she a hefgar, Laniam Vlashidim Kashmita. Basilum says no, hefgar is only considered hefgar only if it's available for both the poor and the rich, just like Shmita fruit is available to everybody. So the same way any kind of hefgar has to be available to anybody. So you can't pick and choose who something is hefgar for. So how is Rabbi Shmuel able to do this? So Elo, you're right. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yosi, l'kulam mafkirinu. He is in fact mafkir to anybody. And mitzad din, the person would be allowed to take it. Over milsa ba'almo who da'ik more. Just Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Shmuel is using a word to stop him. In other words, the guy doesn't know that halacha necessarily, so he's going to think that he can't take it. But in fact, la halacha, he would have been allowed to take it. So this is an example of mipnei davke sholem, kind of. This is an example where Talmid Chacham can bend the truth a little bit, mipnei davke sholem, because again, otherwise this is going to keep on going on endlessly like this. They say actually that in a way he's not really saying anything untrue at all. He's saying loch lo yafkiranu. I haven't made them hefker for you to be able to keep on taking it. I'm making it hefker, and yes, technically you could take it, but I'm not doing it with the intention that you should be able to do this again and again. So the question is, the question is, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi is a zokin. It's not the kovadik for him to load wood onto somebody's shoulders. He could have said to begin with, I'm potter, find somebody else to help. Why is he even getting involved over here and buying the wood and paying for it twice and so on and so forth? And the answer is, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi, lefnim mishuras adin. The answer is, he acted lefnim mishuras adin. And we know that that's important to do, to Tony Rabbi Yosi. As Rabbi Yosef taught a braisa, we learned this in Baba Kama as well. You have when Yisrael comes to Moshe and he sees him judging all the people, and he tells him you have to set up judges, and he tells him the expression. He says, you should inform them of the way in which they should go, and the deeds that they should do. And each phrase in that pasuk is teaching us a different way that a yid has to act. So, when it says you should inform them, means zeh beis chayehem, means this is the place of their life. So Rashi explains that it means Torah and mitzvah, it already says earlier in the pasuk, is how to esmes achukim vesa Torahs. So now when it continues, it can't refer to the way of Torah, because that was already explained earlier in the pasuk. Rather, it means teach them about the concept of teach them a trade, teach them something that they can earn a living from. Rashi in Bava Kama actually explains differently that Beis Chayei means teach them the importance of learning Torah, which is a Yid's life. In fact, Agoy Sabach wonders over here. He says Tzorach Iyun, why Rashi explains differently over here than over there. So there's a Rabbi Levi Yitzchok, the Rebbe's father, talks about it in a number of places, and he points out, first of all, among other things, you have there's the different things, like you have in Pirkei Avos, Imen Kemach and Torah, Imen Torah and Kemach. So they're both interdependent, kind of. So therefore, Rashi can explain one in one place and one in another place. And he explains different nuances Das has to do with Torah. That explains why Rashi over there explains that, and Das brings life. When you have Das together with Torah, and you offer Talmud Torah and Derech Eretz, then you have life. So therefore, it all kind of fits together. Anyway, so that's Beis Chayehem. Es HaDerech Zu Gmilas Chasadim, when it continues the way, that refers to Gmilas Chasadim, which is that a Yid goes on the way to do a Chesed for another Yid. Asher Yelchu Zebikur Cholem, when the Pasuk, it doesn't say Asher, in the Pasuk actually, whatever. Yelchu, when it says that they should go, refers to Bikur Cholem, where you go to be Mavakur Cholem. But when the Pasuk continues in it, Zu Kvura, that refers to the mitzvah of helping to bury a fellow Yid. So Yisra is telling Moshe you have to teach the Yid and the importance of that also. And the point is that Kvura, in the sense that all the other ones the other person can reciprocate later on. But Marsha explains, and in Baba Kama, you're doing it exclusively for the mitzvah, because it's a chesed shalemes, the other guy is never going to repay you. The Esamah says Adin, when it continues, the deed refers to judging Dine Torah, and or refers to not just judging Dine Torah, but following the actual Din. Asher Yasun, that they should do, Zulafnim Mishuras Adin, that refers to acting Lafnim Mishuras Adin. So the Rishmal was acting Lafnim Mishuras Adin based on this. So the Gemara says, let's analyze this a little bit. We said Omamar Asher Yelchu is a Bikul Cholim. We're saying that Yelchu refers to Bikul Cholim. The question is, why does that have to be mentioned specially? Why does that have to be mentioned individually anyway? Isn't Bikkur Cholim part of Gmilas Chasadim? Why does it need a separate word in the pasuk? And the answer is the chiddush is even when the person who's visiting is ben giloy, when he shares the same mazel as the same shodosh haneshama as the person he's visiting. We learn in Masechta Nedarim ben giloy noitel echem mishishim b'chol yoy, that when a ben giloy visits a sick person, he takes away 1/60th of the illness and brings it on himself. So therefore, so you would think, so regular gemilas chasadim, fine, you're not losing out, you're helping a fellow yid. But here, you're actually losing out that you're now getting 1/60th of his sickness. So you would think maybe you shouldn't have to. Nevertheless, he still has to go. It does affect him, but nevertheless, he's still obligated to go. Because it's only a slight, thing, and therefore, yeah. Shabbos is something else. Yeah. No.
If you walk big steps and lose
it. That's something else. That's something else. A person loses 1/500th of his eyesight by walking big steps during the week, and he gains it back from the Shabbos Kiddush. Yeah, no, that's something else. Yeah. The comparison is that in both cases you have, it doesn't mean each time 1/60th or 1/500th of the total, otherwise after 60 visitors, the guy would be cured, and after 500 steps, the guy's eyesight would be gone. So Tosfos discusses in various places that it means that each time it's 1/60th or 1/500th of what's left. So each time the amount becomes smaller and smaller, and there's always going to be something left. Next, we said bah zukvura. The word bah we're saying refers to helping to bury a fellow yid. Again, haynu gmilas chasadim. Again, why does it need to be mentioned specifically? That's part of gmilas chasadim. And the answer is lo nitzuchai lo zaken ve'en alafi kvoidei. It's talking about this case that we've been just discussing about zaken ve'en alafi kvoidei. Even so, a zaken ve'en alafi kvoidei wouldn't have to do other kinds of gmilas chasadim. For example, a shavas aveda, like we've been discussing in the sugya. However, he is obligated to be involved in kvoda, even though it's ein alafi kvoidei. Then we said asher yasun zu lefnei mishuras hadin. When we're saying that they should do refers to acting lefnei mishuras hadin, what's so important about that? The Amar Rabbi Yochanan loichor v'yerushalayim el al shadona b'din Torah. Yerushalayim was destroyed only because they judged the laws of the Torah in it. So I'm going to ask, what do you mean? So what are you expecting them to judge arbitrarily the way that the goyim do? Of course, you have to judge according to Torah. Ela ema shehem midu dinayim al din Torah. What Rabbi Yochanan means is that they established their behavior exclusively based on din Torah. Voy avdu lefnim mishuras hadin. They never acted lefnim mishuras hadin, and therefore, because of that, Yerushalayim was destroyed. Tosfos points out, we have elsewhere where it says sinas chinam, and Tosfos says hor v'hor garm. Both of them are contributing factors, and maybe you could say one leads to the other because they were always picky about doing things exactly according to the book, and not doing a chesed for another year. Therefore, that led to sinas chinam. Mao Sho explains over here that
one second. Can you elaborate a bit on that? You're saying that they neglected Yidden and they emphasized being lifnei mishurat hadin.
So what we're saying is, in other words, that in Yerushalayim before the Churban, Rabbi Yechon is saying people were following halacha. If you went over there and you saw the way people are acting, you would be overawed by how closely they're following halacha. But the problem is, he's saying they didn't go the extra mile to act with Nimashur Sadiq. And that's what led to the Churban, because a yid has to not just act by the book, a yid has to go beyond the book and go with Nimashur Sadiq.
Yes, a yid has to go lifnei mishuras hadin, but how can Yerushalayim have been destroyed because of that? I mean, where does it say that in the Torah that we have to go lifnei mishuras hadin?
Right here, Asher Yasun, right here, Yisrael is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to inform them not only the chukim and the Torah, the basics of Torah, you also have to inform them these other things that are also essential to live as a yid. And among them is Gmilas Chasadim and the various subparts of Gmilas Chasadim that we said, including Bikur Cholim and Kvura and so on and so forth. And then ultimately one of them is Asher Yasun that you have to do in a way that it shouldn't just be. Marshall points out not just v'as hamase, what needs to be done, but also asher yasun, that each one should be willing to go and do something l'fnei mishuras hadin, not just ba'al kocham. Therefore, it's called asher yasun. And now we're saying that if a person doesn't do that, then we're saying that can have serious consequences. And again, Tosfos is saying that elsewhere the Gemara says it was a matter of sinas chinam. So maybe we could say balabatish, that one kind of leads to the other. If you always have that people are going to be extra, it has to be this way, and because I'm entitled to this al pi halacha, and therefore I demand it no matter what, and I'm not going to forgive anybody else, then it seems fairly obvious that leads to, or that can be caused by, really, it can be the cause and effect relationship could go either way, really, of sinas chinam. And as we know, that was the cause of the churban bayis sheni. So therefore, here the Gemara is stressing that it shouldn't be that way. A person has to act with mishuras hadin, and a person has to act with avas chinam, and that will bring the gola amidas vashlema miyad mamash.
What you said, lifnei mishuras hadin, avas chinam, and gemilos chasadim is din. That's what it is, isn't it? What you
no,
say?
No, that's what we're saying. You can have din. You can have din, for example, where let's take this case of Reb Shmuel Reb Yosi. He din would have been you're having trouble with your load of wood. I'm sorry, I can't help you. It's I'm a zokin and ain't a kvoda. So wait around over here, and eventually somebody else will pass by and he'll help you. Instead, Rabbi Shmuel got involved over there. He's not going to actually help the guy put the wood on his shoulders. It's not the covenant for him, but he is going to make sure that the guy doesn't lose out. He's going to pay him for his wood and even pay him twice for the wood, in order that the guy shouldn't suffer a loss. That's an example of going l'fnei mishuras hadin, which we're saying is how a yid needs to act.
Mm-hmm. And that applies to everything?
That applies wherever it can be applied, yeah. I mean, obviously, for example, a dayan in Beis Din can't go l'fnei mishuras hadin. He has to judge. He has to judge and say the halacha is as the halacha is what it is. But let's say, for example, so he decides the dayan decides, for example, Reuven, you owe Shimon $100. For example, it should be that Shimon, where possible, should go to l'fnei mishuras hadin and tell Reuven, okay, I'm moichel, I'm some or all of that choiv or whatever, or I'll help you out some other way. Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Menschlichkeit, in other words.
Yeah. But so a yid has to be a yid has to be a mensch. Yeah, a yid has to be a mensch and go beyond being a mensch. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.